Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is August 1st, 2014. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles, Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. She is also the co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. Now, as you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. And one of the easiest ways to get there is just to go to the 1-2radio.com website. And on the left side of the page, click the chat button. You'll be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. Now, if you're not already a member, just hit the join button and come on in to the 1-2 Radio chat room. On today's show, we are going to focus on how to develop a relationship with Jesus or with our inner teacher. Susan just got back from a week in Temecula, California, where she was participating in a workshop at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. So I know she has a lot to share with us this morning. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, CA. It's nice to be here.
Hey, it's good to be with you, too. And I can hardly wait to hear about your trip to Temecula. I know we talked a little bit. I saw you Tuesday night at your study group, which was great, by the way. I so needed that study group that day.
Thank you. And it was a nice rainy evening in a small group.
So. Rainy evening. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We're just getting washed away. But
finally,
the sun is out. Although, I'll tell you, my plants in my yard, they love that rain. So I don't care. It was perfect.
Oh, I know. Everything looks like a little, you know, I have a little fairy garden that's sprung up, you know, suddenly and around all of my other plants. It's really cool. It looks like we're in the Pacific Northwest or something.
Yeah. Well, and I have to tell you this because I think it's a bit of synchronicity. You know, as we were talking that night, I was just feeling, you know, sometimes, you know, I've shared with you, I just listen to too much news or I just listen to stuff and I just begin to feel like, whoa, what the heck, you know, how do you even just get out of this funk, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so we had that great discussion at the group and I was feeling really good and I got in the car. And what I like to do oftentimes is I take my iPod and instead of putting it on a playlist, I just say, you know, I put it on shuffle and I just kind of put out the message, whatever I need to hear is what I'm going to hear. Well, so I'm driving home and one of the lessons from A Course in Miracles came on and I don't remember which one it was, but it was the one that is beyond this world, there is a world that I want.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling you what, I thought, you know, if there's ever any doubt that somehow I do have an inner teacher that all I have to do is just say, what do I need to hear? What do I need to see? That was like such an affirmation to me of that process. And so as I drove home, I just got to listen to that lesson and listen to, you know, and that's a particularly great lesson anyway, because the one before it basically says, this world holds nothing that you want.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, so often I get in that place of this world holds nothing that I want. And that lesson immediately says, okay, but don't stop there. You know,
right.
You know, and beyond this world, there is a world that you want.
Absolutely. If we stop with just the metaphysics of the course that there is no world, we're going to be in despair. Because where does that mean? You know, where does
right.
that lead me? And so what we're being led to is the awareness that there is, you know, there is a world I want. There is, and there is a you know, I did not destroy real love. There is a teacher that's going to lead me to what I believe I destroyed, back to it. And,
right.
and it's going to, you know, that sense of, we talked about in that class too, and we often talk about that sense of lack. The Course often talks about that sense of loss that really everyone here feels. You know, mm-hmm. we deny it very well, many, some better than others, and we try to cover it over, but you know, there's that nagging, a little twinge, you know, pang that's always kind of there, a tiny throb. I think it says in lesson 182 of you know of that lost the child, the one inner child that feels lost here, because we believe that we destroyed our home, our parent, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so we're all. Really, our topic today is talking about how, you know, the only real problem is our mistaken belief that we turned away from that all-encompassing love that meets all our needs, that is the true comfort of, you know, for an answer to every question and true safety. The only problem is we believe we turned away from that, and the only answer is learning to turn back to it for in with everything that we think is happening with us. And I mean, even though the Course, it's very important for us to understand the metaphysics of the Course, that there is no world and God doesn't know about this world and the entire universe is a projection of that thought of separation in the mind. On a practical level, here in this dream of life that we all, you know, that we're still seem to be in, we can't shout down the reality of what seems to be happening in our lives. We have to start with the specifics in our lives and at times the despair, that all the anger and depression and fear that arises in our lives, and then we have to take that back. We have to turn back to love with those illusions and say, you know, I need help with this because, it sure looks bleak to me.
Right.
and really there is no way out of this by ourselves. All we can do is find another substitute that will ultimately fail us. I mean, we try to cover this over with, in so many ways, you know, with special love, we are trying to use food, we're trying to use substances, we're trying to use wealth and prestige and all the things that we think will make us happy, success, and ultimately none of it works because, again, we're looking for we're not getting close to what the real problem is. The problem is only that I believe that I destroyed that love, I turned away from that love, and the only answer is going back to the mind that believed that and looking at it with a different teacher that never believed it and then knows that we're all safe and protected and we're all going home. We all got home. And we can't fail at this. I've been thinking a lot lately that, you know, Jesus has never flunked anyone.
Yeah.
and so, you know, thank God. As much as I really think that I'm, you know, in danger of it all the time and I'm trying secretly to flunk this, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So that's very reassuring too. You know, he tells us all throughout the Course we cannot fail with this. You know, we never left. And of course that's not our experience, but we're being led when we turn back to that love, we're being led to that awareness. When we are willing to say my way isn't working over and over again, which is, you know, really paying attention, being vigilant for any time I'm feeling anything but peaceful and loving toward everyone and everything, including myself, which is like 24/7 for most of
right.
us. Then I need a teacher, you know, and that's okay. I mean, to me, that's such a relief because, you know, I mean, I just have messed this up royally, you know.
Right. Looking for love in all the wrong places.
Right. We can't succeed here, you know, but now we have a path that is leading us in the direction and a teacher that knows the direction. And, you know, so that's very comforting. If we'll allow ourselves to just stop trying to dig in our heels and say, you know, it's got to be my way, and Jesus is just saying, you can go your way as long as you want, but how's that making you feel?
Right.
You know?
Well, and something you said in class the other night that I've heard many times, still I just kind of thought how I resist it. And that is when something comes up, I think Ken Wapnick maybe originally said this, or maybe it comes right from the Course, but it was something like, you know, when something is going on for you, whatever the distress is, whether it's physical or psychological or emotional, you can say, oh, I must have forgotten that, you know, I must have forgotten love.
Right.
I must have forgotten my
right.
fear of love. And I think I resist that because that's one of the things. I don't remember resisting love. I don't remember turning away from love. And I don't know, that's one of the harder things for me to resonate with. But when you said it, I thought, well, see, there's your resistance right there, CA. You're still trying to figure it out. You're still trying to shout it down. And you're still saying, well, I don't remember turning away from love, so that must not be my experience.
Right.
And I thought, why don't you just try it? Why don't you, why don't you just try the next time something comes up? Just say, oh, I guess I must have turned away from love, and I'm still resisting that. You know, just try it and see what happens. And so I did try it, and, you know, it worked.
It worked. And, you know, that's exactly the conversation I was sort of hoping to have today, because we're so completely out of touch with that frightened child, you know, that part of us that turned away, that really deeply believes that this happened, and that we so deeply and so unconsciously believes this, that we don't even have any, we don't know what love is,
right?
You know, we're referencing it by what the substitutes that we've made in the world. And so it just that simple process of saying, you know, Ken did say that a lot, and the teachers who are so great at the foundation, you know, where you mentioned I was just out there for the July Academy classes, they were really bringing that up a lot. And it's just that idea of, you know, I just became afraid of love again. Every time we are upset by anything, and you know, that is what's really going on. And just being able to remind ourselves of that, It's like it circumvents somehow. It just kind of stops that ego circuit. It breaks it a little bit because it questions it. Mm-hmm. It challenges it. And what I find is, and as you said, I mean, it doesn't. That's not what we intellectually believe. And many people who are attracted to the Course are very intellectual people. It happens to attract that type of person. And we love to analyze, and we love to try to, you know, work it out in the metaphysics. And you know, Ken was always saying, Jesus is always saying, you know, he gives us the metaphysical foundation, but then he says, you know what? Metaphysics, schmetaphysics. I mean, I've heard Ken say that, you know, on a practical level, instead of trying to figure out, you know, where the unforgiveness was when we're sick, or where we're upset in our, you know, we feel attacked in our relationships, instead of trying to analyze the whole thing and sort it out and figure out which part is, you know, which is what we do to their ego and which part is my ego, which, you know, that's very funny because there's just one ego. Mm-hmm. And so instead of trying to do all of that when we become sick, you know, when we become mentally, physically, emotionally sick, to just say, maybe I just became afraid of love again. And maybe I'll feel better when, you know, that fear subsides. Mm-hmm. I want to turn back to love. And the love is still there. And maybe I can just be patient with myself. Maybe I'm exactly where I want to be right now. And, you know, I'm actually willing to let go. This resistance doesn't mean I'm failing the Course. I didn't do anything wrong. It just shows me how afraid I am. And I need to look at that.
Right. Even when we don't feel like that's what's going on.
Even when we don't feel like it. I mean, but our fear, Jesus is saying, your fear is the red flag that you're fear, okay, your whatever reaction.
The symptom is, whatever discomfort
symptom,
is.
Right,
yeah.
Whatever form the negative emotion is in is always reflective of that fear and guilt in the mind. And it's fear of, he says it's fear of me, him, because he symbolizes for us, you know, we believe we destroyed God. He's the bridge back.
Right.
So, you know, you became afraid of me again. I'm your companion that's going to lead you out of here, but you're so terrified of where I'm leading you that you push me away again and again. And that's okay, though, because I'm not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I never went anywhere, you know?
Yeah. But like I said, you know, when I think about it intellectually, I'm not afraid of love. Why would I be afraid of love?
We're so out of touch with it.
Well, that's it. I am totally out of touch with it.
Right.
But that's why that phrase was always hard for me to use. But the other night, when you said it, I thought, yep, there's your resistance. That's a little resistance right there. Why do you, you know, and I just realized, because you had said you can't shout it down. You can't keep analyzing it. But when that's my go-to tool, is to analyze something. Yes. I don't even know that I'm doing it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I just go into my mode.
And well, that tool of reminding yourself that I just became afraid of love again. And then, I mean, what Ken always emphasizes, then stop. What's so hard for us to do is stop. You know, we might be able to say, yes, I became afraid of love again, but then we do just what you said. But I'm not, I don't think that's what's really going on. And you know, and then also we want, you know, of course, then we go running back to form. We want to fix, we still want, you know, we still have to have, just in case Jesus, you know, can't handle this, we're going to go take care of it in form, you know, and that, I mean, of course, what we're really being asked to do is to just be willing to be proven wrong. You know, I don't believe that love is the problem, but Jesus is telling us love is the only problem. And there's some, the love, there, you know, what drew most of us to this course is not the depth of its intellectual understanding, is not the heaviness of the book, is not, you know, how wordy it is. What drew us to it is the love that we sensed it's pointing to. And that's really, but as you said, that's our resistance. And we need to come up. One of the teachers, Rosemary, at the foundation uses a phrase that I think is so great. And she's like, you know, she said that it's a head-on collision. At some point, you have to come up against the head-on collision of the ego thought system and what Jesus is saying.
Mm.
You know, because what does it mean for me? I mean, it's really like, again, you know, for us, since we are the absence of love, and love is the answer, what does that mean for me? You know, and so it's that feeling of my whole personal identity is going to crumble when if I really surrender to that love.
Yes.
And of course, that's nonsense. I mean, that's, you know, that happens. This is a journey. This is a process. That what that's going to look like at the end of the road, we don't need to know. But right now, we will feel love. Right now, we will feel loved and loving, which is what most of us have not felt secretly most of our lives and are so deeply longing for. And we can invite that experience in now. We can, you know, this very process of looking at how afraid of love we are is what's going to allow us to have an experience of love. You know, that gentleness will return to our mind. And I found it so, they read this section on the epilogue to the workbook. It was a reading that they did one afternoon and while we were talking about this subject. And it was just like being completely open to that. It just spoke to me. The whole conversation spoke to me before that, and then that reading, and it felt like a direct. It felt like Ken speaking to us all, because he's a symbol too for that, for many of us, of that ego-free presence, that completely loving, unconditionally loving presence. And I really was getting quite choked up, by, you know, sitting there by myself trying to pretend I wasn't. And at the end of it, you know, I had this sense I'm just going to burst from the fullness of this. It's like nothing that we have in the world, you know, of just complete love. Like everything you've ever done is okay, you know, and everyone, everything that's ever happened is okay. We're all safe. We're all embraced in this. And I just had the thought, I'm just going to burst from this. And I heard Ken in my head saying, well, that would be okay. Just try not to splatter. Which was such a kind of thing that Ken would say, you know. I mean, it was totally, he was such a sort of gentle, goofy, playful sense of humor. And it was just so lovely, you know. It just was like, wow, it's just still here. You can't break this connection, you know.
Right.
And so it's there. It's there for us. And it really, this practice is inviting that intimacy all the time into our lives. And you know, and the invitation, how we know that we need to invite it is when we're so, you know, when we're really not feeling it.
Right.
That's the time, you know, when we most need to draw close to it.
Yes.
And have faith that it's there even when we're not feeling it.
Yeah. Which is the hard thing. I mean, because like I said, you know, depending on, I mean, some people trust their emotions, some people trust their mind. And, you know, we learn to trust those, and yet they are such faulty barometers, both of them.
Right.
You know, for so many things in life. I mean, there are times when, you know, I mean, and maybe that's one of the difficulties too. I was telling somebody the other day, I feel like, you know, I've got a foot in both ways. You know, it's sort of like a foot in spirituality and a foot in the world, because, you know, just the idea of being kind, like, well, when somebody's upset, you know, you can't look at it and go, well, you know, this is just an illusion. You forgot about love. You know, that's not going to help them.
No.
I mean, it may help me if I kind of process through that, but just trying to be kind and to be normal, as Ken said, sometimes can be difficult, because being normal to me partially is listening to my mind and listening to, you know, that evaluation or that analyst up there going, na 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 na. That seems normal to me.
Right. And that's really why, I mean, it's normal to all of us. That's been our, you know, I mean, that's what we've overtaught ourselves, the ego thought system, right? That we have a brain that can reason things and make sense of a senseless world. And, but, you know, that is why it's so important, I think, to try to make this a practice and to really cultivate that intimacy in our day. And, you know, that really is the process of trying to, again, you know, to make the purpose of my days, my life, being a pupil of Jesus, and you know, that looking at my life and everything that happens and seems to happen in my life as a classroom and as another opportunity to let go of some more guilt. And in a situation like that you're describing, you know, if I can invite Jesus as my teacher in with me, and, you know, when I'm feeling uncertain about how to react in a relationship, or I'm beginning to feel judgmental about someone else's ego meltdown or someone being sick or whatever, you know, and I'm trying to, like, you know, course them in my mind,
right,
intellectualize this, then you know, that will really, once I become aligned with that love, once I allow myself to feel that love, then I will see that I have an ego too, and it's just my ego. It's just my mind in need of healing. And then it's like, you know, the kindness just flows. The compassion just flows. Oh, they have an ego too. Of course they're hurting. Everybody's hurting here, you know? And so that whatever needs to be, would be kind, will just happen. And it will be normal. It will be normal, but also not normal, in the sense that so much of the kindness of the world is really false kindness, is really giving to get, is really, you know, doing what we want, what is the politically correct and socially acceptable thing, but is really just covering over that, you know, we don't necessarily genuinely feel it. We're doing it because we want to be good people, you know, and we want to pretend to ourselves that we're good, but it's not necessarily coming from a sense of real compassion. And in fact, I mean, the Course tells us, if we're joining with the ego in another, in the fear and the weakness in another at the level of the mind, then we're not being kind at all.
Right.
You know, so many things that we do for others are out of a sense of obligation and sacrifice. And the Course will, if you're practicing this, it will really help us to, you know, all of that opposes that love will come to the surface for us to look at, and we'll become much more conscious when we're doing that in our own lives, and really, you know, and just questioning it. Just, it isn't that it's a sin, or we're, you know, it's coming from a very fearful place within us that we're never good enough. and you know, if we can just really look at that gently with Jesus, then, and of course you can use any symbol you want. It doesn't have to be Jesus, but that is the symbol the Course uses, because it's trying to offer us a different view of Jesus than a Jesus that was all about sacrifice. And so, you know, and anyway, if we can just invite that presence in, it will allow us to we will allow that to be undone, all that's opposing love to be undone, and all those you know, that feeling of obligation and sacrifice and giving to get that we do, that we're taught to do and we teach ourselves to do, will kind of fall away. And really, you know, what I've found in my own life is that that it just becomes, you know, that whole conflict around it just dissolves. And maybe you'll go and visit the person, or maybe you won't, but you'll be loving and whatever comes from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said something that I needed to be reminded of that I think is interesting, is there really is only one ego and there really is only one mind.
Right.
And so when wherever we are, whatever the situation is, we can really look at it and say, do I want to join with this person's ego? Because we have the same ego.
Right.
Do I want to reinforce in them and in myself that, yes, the ego is the teacher, or do I want to turn to my right mind and therefore reinforce in them the right mind as well? You know,
absolutely.
And it's not,
yeah.
I'm not even talking about manipulation, but just at every moment, you know, we are totally connected, but we can either choose to reinforce the ego in all of us, or we can choose to reinforce the right mind in all of us.
Absolutely. I mean, everything that seems to be happening out there, quote unquote, to the contrary, this is all happening in the mind. And there really is only one special relationship, and that's my relationship with my ego.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is only one holy relationship, and that's my relationship with Jesus. And, you know, my being the decision-making mind. This is all happening as a fragment of the decision-making mind. So in any given moment, the focus must always be on our own mind. It always helps me to, something that I've used for a long time that is helpful to me, is whenever I seem to be witnessing an ego attack in someone else, and tempted to become, and feeling myself reacting in any way. It really helps me to just say, you know, this is my own mind in need of healing. And then that again, it's just like, you know, I became afraid of love again. It's the same idea. And mm-hmm. and really that stops me and shows me that, again, that the only problem is I turned away from love because, nothing outside me has the power to take that love or peace away from me. I made a decision to join with this ego.
Right.
And, you know, I can, and as soon as I become right-minded again through that questioning, then I can be truly compassionate. Now, sometimes, you know, it depends. And we all have a hierarchy of illusions. When someone's having a really, you know, crazy meltdown seeming in your face kind of thing, you may have to withdraw from the situation. You know, do the normal thing. Again, it's not saying that we don't protect our bodies or call 911 or do what, you know, I mean, I'm not saying to be stupid about this. And,
uh-huh.
From our perspective in bodies, it would be very unkind to do that. But as soon as but there's a lot of situations that we can right there practice this in. And certainly at the level of the mind, we can always be practicing it no matter what we do in form.
Yes. But man, it is so hard when we see people either as individuals or groups acting out in ways that we think is so contrary to ourselves, to come back and say, wow, I'm projecting that right out there.
Right.
You know, it's so difficult because that is the process of forgetting that we're doing it and then projecting onto somebody else.
And I think in practice, it's not so helpful to me to think of it as I'm projecting it, because I, Susan, am not projecting it. You, CA, are not projecting it. We're not, you know what
I
mean?
Are you sure?
Yeah. we want to make it about us, you know, but it really, this is happening. We don't know why this is happening at the level of the mind, and we really can't wrap our heads around that from
yes.
our perspective. But what we can do is say, you know, if I'm reacting to this, then I became afraid of love again.
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple. I'm not upset. You know, again, question the cause of my reaction. The cause is never about the other person. The cause is never about, the horrible things that are happening in this world. And the cause is always because I became afraid of love again. And, you know, again, a part of me I'm not in touch with became afraid of love again. And you know, I can't be loving in this situation until my own fear subsides. And I need help with that. And that help is there. But I have to be willing to stop and to question it, to just question
right.
it, to be willing to be proven wrong. And yes, I mean, it's, again, you know, the world was was made to be a mess. I mean, we don't, there was somebody, I wish I could, I only caught part of it on NPR, but it was like the summary of some, I don't know, it sounded like Madeleine Albright or something, but it was somebody, you know, some head of diplomacy somewhere. And at the very end of the quote that the little bit I caught was just, there is really nothing more to be said than that the world is in a terrible mess or something. And I was thinking, well, yes, it is. It's always been in a terrible mess, you know? And so, again, we set it up that way. And, mm-hmm. and you know, the course is asking us to see the problem as it is and not the way we set it up. And as it is means seeing it with Jesus, just seeing it as a call for love, as a defense against love, and a senseless defense against love, because nothing happened, you know? Nothing really, we didn't destroy love. We don't need to defend against love. But we need to, in our classroom, look at all the different ways that we try to make that real.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and that's it. You know, I was talking on the show, I think, just a couple of weeks ago about how nothing really ever changes.
No, it doesn't.
In fact, there is a billboard in Denver, and it's actually for a bank, but I love it, and I'd like to take a picture of it. I saw it the other night, in fact, when I was driving to your class, because it, in big words, in big letters, it says, "Breaking news. Nothing's changed." And then when you look in the corner, it says still free checking or something. It's such a-
Right, right. But it's like there's banners like that, ego banners everywhere you look, right? You
know? Yes. Yeah. There really are. So I'd love to figure out how
but
to take
could, that could be a right-minded, we could, we, you know, if we looked at it with Jesus, it could be good news. Nothing's changed, you know?
That's right.
The love is still there.
That's right. That is right. So, yeah, I loved it. You know, there again, a little piece of synchronicity that when you're looking for it or when you're open to it, you know, the messages, the clues are always there.
You know, yes. And it's really, that's another way of telling which teacher, you know, again, if we look at the end result of what we're feeling or seeing or interpreting, we can always tell which teacher we've been looking with, right?
Right.
And so, you know, this really is, again, that process of just admitting that, you know, I've the ego has been my teacher most of my life, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
It's been a mess. And, you know, that's good news. It's not, again, we're not doing anything wrong. It's not, everybody here's life is a mess, you know, whether they're many people's defense is to, you know, Ken used to use the term bliss ninny for people that, you know,
right.
frantically are always telling you that things are good. And you know, that's...
And getting better and more evolving.
And getting better and the world is evolving and the, you know, I mean, it's but that, you know, that's coming from the same place of fear. We either do that or we're in despair. It doesn't matter. They're both the same, trying to make the dream real, you know, mm-hmm. and really, but the answer, it's never going to get better. It's never going to, even the best of things that happen here will never fill the lack we feel within, and we're going to constantly need more, and it's exhausting, and it won't work, and we have to come to that realization, you know, that this isn't working, but now I have a new direction, and I have a new teacher, and I have a new purpose to my life. And the purpose can be learning, you know, this practice of forgiveness, which is just every time I'm feeling reactive, questioning the cause of it. It's not out there, you know. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm feeling all these things, but that's not the reason. I became afraid of love again, and the love is still there. And I could feel that love. I could feel that peace, and I want to.
Yes.
You know?
Well, and you said before something about the reason that it's the love that attracts us to the course.
Yes.
And but on a very practical level, what really attracted me to this course, and I think attracts many people, is disappointment.
Yes.
And that's it, because no matter where we look for happiness, no matter where we look for peace or evolvement, or wherever we're looking for the key and the answer, it disappoints.
Right.
Because, well, once again, it's that looking for love in all the wrong places.
All the wrong
you know,
places,
when we keep thinking that we can make it happen, when we're coming from the ego, even when we don't know that we're coming from the ego, we just have all these things that we think are going to fill the black hole, so to speak. And when I started reading the course, it was the very first thing that ever said, yeah, you'll never fill that black hole with the world. You know, the world doesn't have it. What you're looking for is not in the world. You know?
Yeah, it's so reassuring. I agree. Yeah. And you know, and God didn't make this world. God doesn't even know about this world. I mean, that to me was just so awesome, you know,
yes.
because I had such a beef with a God that would have anything to, you know, the whole mythology that we take, you know, that we're taught and that we take for granted about this this hierarchy of suffering, you know, it just did not make any sense to me ever. And as you said, in my own searching and life, I exhausted and you know, emphasis on the word exhausted, because it is exhausting to be seeking where and never finding,
mm-hmm.
which is the ego's mantra, right? You know, something better will always be around the horizon. Well, enough already. You reach a point where, you know, you have exhausted all those possibilities. And that was the point that Helen and Bill came to that invited the scribing of the course. There has to be another way. There has to be a better way of living in this world. Because, those are those two lessons that you mentioned earlier, you know. You know, that there's nothing in the what were they again? I'm blanking.
The world holds nothing
that I want, and beyond this world, there is a world I want. And you know, it is. We have to first come to the idea, really, truly, in our own experience, that the world I see holds nothing that I want. And you know, even when we think we've come to that idea, we still have a few things we're willing to try, right?
Susan, absolutely.
We're very willing to be proven wrong about that, you know?
But, yes, we are.
Yeah.
But that's it. When the Course all of a sudden says, you know, this is the reason this makes sense, it's like it totally makes sense. It's somewhat comforting to know God didn't make the world.
It's very comforting, I think, to know. I mean, if you've really thought about the whole, I was raised Catholic, and you know, it's very comforting to people, and I'm not in any way, you know, trying to attack or diminish that. But in my own experience, there was such a gap between what the church and Christian dogma in general was saying versus, versus what seemed to be happening in the world. I mean, it seemed to be condoning suffering. The idea that there would be a chosen son that was, you know, sacrificed by God.
Yeah, right.
Was very disturbing to me. You know?
Yeah,
and that was his favorite.
Yes.
So what's going to happen to me? You know, so it's, you know, we walk around with tremendous fear and guilt and sin and you know, religion is one of the many institutions that propagates that, and that's all because we made this up and to keep that idea of sin, guilt, and fear going. That's what holds it all together. That's what holds the idea of many bodies at war with each other, you know, together, and that my only salvation is to prove that I do exist, but it's not my fault. It's somebody else's. That's the only way I can get off the hook, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, life becomes a pretty grim kind of situation for all of us. So, you know, now we have this other way, and people, you know, our egos will love to try to tell us this course isn't working. I know mine does. And point out all the ways that, you know, in which I'm failing and all the, you know, all the many things that are wrong in my life and you know, the unforgiveness and blah, 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 blah. But the truth is, you know, if we've made this our goal, we are experiencing much more and allowing much more love into our life. You know, it is changing the way I look at everything. I'm feeling much more compassion for others and am very quickly able a lot of the time now to at least identify my mind on ego, my own mind in need of healing, and to stop myself from hurting myself through these projections and you know, to realize that the other person, it has the same ego I do, and of course they're afraid. Of course they're acting out. You know, and so And then again, if we can cultivate this presence of love within us, we can actually begin to start feeling that, and that gives us the support. That gives us the, you know, to that's what's leading us. I mean, we need to lean on this strength that is offered us in the Course until we completely become that strength, until we realize it's us. Can I just read a little bit from that manual that I was talking about?
Yeah, in fact, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking, because there are so many wonderful passages from that that, you know, are exactly what you're saying, because so often, I think, too, we think we're going to do the Course. I've heard people say, you know, when I've mentioned the Course, they go, oh, I already did the Course.
Right.
And it's like, well, you don't, you know, and the very first line of that epilogue is, this Course is a beginning, not the end.
Right, exactly.
And you know, I always, whenever somebody says, oh, I already did the Course, I always go, I don't think so. I don't say that out loud. But I get that, you know, it hasn't become a habit. It hasn't become, you know, an everyday existence or your go-to thought system. If you put it in the past tense, I did the Course.
It's, you know, no, it's a process, and and it's, you know, for most of us, it will be a lifelong process if we really want to allow the undoing of this. We don't know our own atonement path. It's much safer, I think, to just forget about trying to look at the signs of awakening. You'll know when you're awake.
Yeah, right.
look at all of the problems, you know, look at how much you want to stay asleep. That will help you awaken, you know?
Yes.
And look at it with, again, with this part of your mind that can really teach us, because we can't teach ourselves this. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted, we can go to the epilogue, I just wanted to read a couple of sentences that where Jesus talks about his role for us and why we need him in the manual, the section in the manual that I was talking about. It's section 5, and it's on Jesus Christ. And it starts out, there is no need for help to enter heaven, for you have never left. But there is need for help beyond yourself, as you are circumscribed by false beliefs of your identity, which God alone established in reality. So we don't know what we are. And then I'm going to skip down to the next paragraph. He says, the name of Jesus is the name. And remember, this is just a symbol, but that's what the Course is using. The name of Jesus is the name of one who was a man, but saw the face of Christ in all his brothers and remembered God. So, you know, symbolically, this is all metaphorical, but Jesus remembered to laugh at the tiny mat idea that we could separate from our source. And he knew it never happened. He knows he's that symbol. He's that memory of wholeness in our mind that is available to us in the dream. So he became identified with Christ, which Christ is the symbol of innocence, of our true nature that's used in the Course, a man no longer, but at one with God. And then it goes on to say, Jesus became, I'm skipping to the next paragraph, what all of you must be. He led the way for you to follow him. He leads you back to God because he saw the road before him and he followed it. So the way that we go back to God is to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is our teacher. He is our older brother. He is our guide out of the hell we made, you know. And so that's why we do need him.
Like too is just that word remember. Mm-hmm. He remembered. And there's another place where it says something about, you know, the peace of God will gently wash across your mind or something like that. I don't remember where it is, and I know I didn't say it correctly. But the idea that I love about the Course is this isn't about learning something new.
No.
It's about unlearning all the stuff that you have on top of what is the true memory. It's to remember God, to remember who we are. And we can never get away from that. The memory is always there. We just keep pushing it aside or covering it up.
Yes, yes. And the more that we invite Jesus in and cultivate, you know, look at our lives as a classroom, cultivate him as, you know, invite him in as our teacher, ask for that presence to be with us as we go through our days, so that the teacher is right there, you know, that memory is right there beside us. That, I mean, that is how we're going to be able to ultimately, you know, what will happen is that reality begins to seep into our dreams. But that's the way I'm finding it to be. It's like I have, you know, especially in spots, you know, the areas of your life that were troubled, the relationships that were troubled, the areas of your life that were more difficult, I'm beginning to have a different experience, even with, you know, wherein I feel the love still there between myself and the others. And it's almost like they are being replaced with happier dreams in a sense, not the form so much, but it's hard to explain, but there's it's like reality kind of, you know, it's like you become a lucid dreamer and you know that you're still, that the love is still there and everything becomes a lot gentler, you know? You're on the same side. So the conflict kind of begins to just fall away. And that comes from a lot of practice. That is not an instant process, you know?
Right.
And I mean, it really is. And again, it's so much about us cultivating that relationship with Jesus. And, I just wanted to on a practical level, also say, like, how do I do that throughout my day? And, you know, it begins by really every day, every morning, the first thing you do when you wake up is to remember Jesus. To remember that's my goal for the day, is to see everyone and everything with you. That I, you know, I want to go home. I want to make my relationship with you the most important thing. Help me throughout my day. Remember you, you know? And then to, as you go through your day, it's like you know, building that in to your day. I think of it as kind of trying, and I don't, of course, you know, forgiving yourself when you forget, because you forget a lot.
Right.
There's a part of us that doesn't want to do this, but I try to kind of take five, you know, with Jesus. take times throughout my day to just stop for a second and, you know, where is that love right now? I invite that in again. And you know, to kind of make that part of your practice. Of course you do it when you become reactive. You know, we know that we have to do it then. But to invite it in even when we're just distracted, even when we're just, you know, to just kind of stop. Where is that love right now? And to kind of, you know, train yourself. That's part of the training that we have to do with ourselves, the practice throughout the day. And then, you know, the last moment before you go to sleep, to be, you know, asking, and the Course says, you know, let me be in charge of your seeming sleeping dreams so that they become dreams of lessons and forgiveness. You know, it's, you know, that we continue, because we're always dreaming. The waking and sleeping really are no different. It seems different from our perspective. But, you know, we want to make everything 24/7 about learning this. And that means bringing in the love. And that will stop it from, you know, that's what will help us with the harshness and the resistance and the self-loathing that kind of surfaces with this process, you know. We need to bring in that memory of love, or it's going to feel very bleak. And when it is feeling very bleak, even when we're not feeling that love, we really have to invite it in then and remember that it's there.
Well, you know? And I think, obviously, one of the best ways to do this is to go through all those workbook lessons.
Yes.
And the reason, because I think they have incredible information in them, but also because it builds a habit. It builds a routine. And even though I think they ask very little of you, in fact, I was quite shocked when I first started doing them, because I was used to doing 20-minute meditations or 30-minute meditations. And, you know, let's face it, sometimes in this kind of a group or this kind of a world, people, you know, how long do you meditate? You know, we have this competition. The longer you meditate, the more, you know, spiritual
you
must be.
You are. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they just say, okay, read this statement and think about it for a couple minutes, and then you're done. And it's like, what?
Right. You know? Right.
But what you realize as you keep going through is that it's an everyday practice. And they switch it up quite a bit as you're going through the workbook. But by the time you've done that for a year or more, because you've gone through 365 lessons, it's a habit. You know,
it's,
and even though
establishing that habit, it's the beginning of that habit, as the
epilogue. It's the beginning of the habit, right.
Yes.
It's certainly not the end.
Right. It's opened you to the idea that this is something that you need to bring into your life, you know, in a very, very conscious form. I mean, it is an active, I mean, although it says we need do nothing, meaning we of the self can't undo this, you know. I mean, we need to do nothing but forgive and practice this. We do need to be active in the sense that this is, again, this is our purpose. It's my new purpose. It's of my life, you know, is to make this a classroom. And but I agree with you, the workbook is very subtly, it starts out with asking very little, but it sort of asks more and more of us as it goes along. Kind of sneaks in there, but really ultimately asks very little, you're right, and gives us an opportunity to see, even with the very small amount of things that it asks us to remember during the day, how difficult that is for us to do, which shows us that there's a part of us that really, really, really doesn't want to learn this, because we can learn many more complicated things than that. We all have, right? But and yet, you know, we can't remember the title of a workbook lesson 10 minutes after we've read it.
But that's part of the lesson. And
that's part of the purpose of the workbook, is to see that, yes.
And I think by the time they're really asking you to do more, you're so hooked.
You're hooked.
You know, you are hooked on it.
You're either hooked or you've fled screaming.
Or you've given up, right.
And again, so, you know, I think we said in the class the other night that this, it's not a popular message, you know, it's because it's not about manipulating the world, it's not about fixing the world, it's not about making a better dream, it's about, you know, it's about awakening, returning to love, and we're not, there's a part of us that is so afraid of love, mm-hmm. of real love, you know, even mm-hmm. that word, we really can't, from our experience, you know, we don't really know what that means. It certainly doesn't include everyone in our experience, you know.
Right.
And it does. In Jesus's experience. And one of the things that they said that the terms that they used at the topic of the academy in July was training for goodness, and they had a new way that they were talking about the two inner teachers. You know, normally we talk about it as the ego versus Jesus, Holy Spirit, that the decision-making mind chooses between, and they were referring to them in this as the personal trainer or the impersonal trainer.
Oh!
Which I thought was a great image, because, you know, the ego is our personal trainer. Everything is about making us better. Even the spiritual ego is, as you said, is about, you know, how long did I meditate today? How long, you know, is all about trying to somehow purify that essential evil that we feel within. And you know, the impersonal trainer is all about everyone is, you know, victim and victimizer is included in God's love, has never left God's love, you know?
Right. Well, and I love that. I love that, the personal trainer and the impersonal trainer. But, you know, Susan, we only have 3 minutes left in the show. Probably not quite 3 minutes. Can you believe
goodness.
It? We just chat away, but I love our conversations. But I want to thank you for being here today. But do you have any announcements before we close the show?
Any announcements? Well, I guess I am going to be leading the gathering on this Sunday at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center.
Okay.
And that's at 11 a.m. And my topic is going to be So Close to You, We Cannot Fail. So very much along the same lines of this, and looking at the epilogue and the manual, and you know, this whole idea of really focusing on our relationship with cultivating that relationship with our inner impersonal trainer, with Jesus. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody, in the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center is located in Denver, Colorado. And you can find that if you Google it, or if you contact me, I can certainly get you some information. And also, Susan does conduct or facilitates a discussion group every Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock at the Miracle Center. So if you're interested in that, there again, please come. I mean, we're working through the textbook, which has been really, really nice. So Susan, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, one more thing.
Okay, real quick. I'm going to be posting, I'm doing interviews with the staff at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, individual interviews that I will be posting on my site, www.forayzinforgiveness.com. And they have wonderful stories to tell. I wanted people to know who they are so that they would know that they're, you know, it's so worthwhile to come out and attend these workshops. There's another one coming up in August. There's one in September, October, November, so I believe. So, I'd encourage people to sign up at my site, and they will receive posts there that will very soon include these interviews.
Okay, and I'm really looking forward to those. Thank you for thank you for announcing that, because when you said that before, I was very interested in listening to those.
Yeah, they're wonderful stories. So
yes, great. Well, Susan, thank you so much, and thanks to all the listeners and everybody in the chat room today. Thank you for participating. And Scott Weaver, thank you for being our producer and keeping everything just on track for us today. Now, and you can always find me for personal readings and consultations, mentoring and coaching on 12listen.com, where we are having a sale today, but otherwise sit tight, because coming up next is Christine Dumaurier on Fabulous Friday. So just stick with us, and we've got a lot of great shows, actually. We've got a whole lineup today on Fabulous Friday, so please thank you for being here today, and stick with us here on 12 Radio. And until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 12 Radio with my guest, Susan Dugan, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.